यमुना थीरावनचारी यमुना थीरावनचारी जय राधा माधव कुंज बिहारी जय गोपी जन वल्लभ गिरिवर धारी जय गोपी जन वल्लभ गिरिवर धारी यशोदानंदन ब्रज जन रंजन यशोदानंदन ब्रज जन रंजन यमुना तीरावनचारी यमुना तीरावनचारी जय राधा माधव कुंज बिहारी जय राधा माधव कुंज बिहारी जय राधा माधव कुंज बिहारी जय ओम विष्णुपाद परमहंस परिव्राजक आचार्य अष्टोत्तरहित श्री श्रीमदिष्टिवाइंग्रेस एसी भक्तिवेदांत स्वामी श्रील प्रभुपाद की अनंत कोटि वैष्णव वृंद की ग्रंथराज श्रीमद्भागवतम की निताय गौर प्रेमानंदे ओम नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय ओम नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय ओम नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय नारायणं नमस्कृत्य नरं चैव नरोत्तमं देवीं सरस्वतीं व्यासं ततो जयमुदीरयेत् नष्टप्रायेषु भद्रेषु नित्यं भागवतसेवया भगवती उत्तमश्लोके भक्तिर्भवति नैष्ठिकी हरे कृष्ण सो वी आर रीडिंग फ्रॉम श्रीमद् भागवतम कैंटो 11 चैप्टर 11 टेक्स्ट नंबर 22 द चैप्टर इज एंटाइटल्ड द सिम्टम्स ऑफ लिविंग एंटिटीज सिम्टम्स ऑफ कंडीशनड एंड लिबरेटेड लिविंग एंटिटीज यद्यनीशो धारयितुं मनो ब्रह्मणि निश्चलम् मयि सर्वाणि कर्माणि निरपेक्ष समाचर यद्यनीशो धारयितुं मनो ब्रह्मणि निश्चलम् मयि सर्वाणि कर्माणि निरपेक्ष समाचर यद्यनीशो धारयितुं मनो ब्रह्मणि निश्चलम् मयि सर्वाणि कर्माणि నిరపేక్ష సమాచర. Yadi, if Anisha, incapable. Dharayitum, to fix, manaha, the mind, brahmani, on the spiritual platform, nishchalam, free from sense gratification, mai, in me, sarvani, all, karmani, activities, nirapekshaha, without trying to enjoy the fruits. Samachara, execute. Translation and purport by the disciples of Srila Prabhupada. My dear Uddhava, if you are not able to free your mind from all material disturbance and thus absorb it completely on the spiritual platform, then perform all your activities as an offering to me, without trying to enjoy the fruits. Purport we read half yesterday, we'll read the second half. Similarly, in the 10th canto of the Srimad Bhagavatam, Lord Brahma warns that one should not neglect the auspicious path of bhakti and instead take up the useless labor of mental speculation. By mere philosophical speculation, one cannot fix one's mind on the spiritual platform. Many great philosophers throughout history had abominable personal habits, which proves that they could not fix themselves on the spiritual platform by mere speculation on philosophical categories. If one is not fortunate enough to have executed devotional service to the Lord in one's past life, and if one is therefore addicted to mere speculation on the differences between matter and spirit, one will not be able to fix one's mind on the spiritual platform. Such a person should give up useless speculation and engage in the practical work of Krishna consciousness, absorbing himself 24 hours a day in the mission of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. In such missionary work for the Lord's sake, one should never try to enjoy the fruits of one's work. Even though the mind is not completely pure, if one offers the fruits of one's work to the Lord, the mind will quickly come to the standard of pure desirelessness, in which one's only desire is the Lord's satisfaction. Srila Jiva Goswami states that if one does not have faith in the personal form and activities of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, one will not have the spiritual strength to remain perpetually on the transcendental platform. In this verse, the Lord is definitely bringing Uddhava and all living entities to the conclusion of all philosophy, pure devotional service to the Supreme Lord Krishna. In this regard, Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur points out that one who is bewildered by false ego may not want to offer his activities to the Supreme Personality of Godhead, even though this is the actual way of rising above the influence of the modes of material nature. Because of ignorance, one does not know that he is the eternal servant of Krishna and instead is attracted by the duality of material illusion. One cannot become free from such illusion by theoretical speculation. But if one offers one's work to the personality of Godhead, one will clearly understand his eternal transcendental position as a servant of the Lord. Om Jnanatimirandasya Jnananjana Shalakaya Chakshurun Nilitam Yena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha Shri Chaitanya Manobhishtam Sthapitam Yena Bhutale Swayam Rupa Kadamahyam Dadati Swapadantikam Vandeham Shri Guru Shri Yuta Padakamalam Shri Gurun Vaishnavamscha Shri Rupam Sagrajatam Sahagana Raghunathanvitam Tam Sajivam Sadvaitam Savadhutam Parijana Sahitam Krishna Chaitanya Devam Shri Radha Krishna Padan Sahagana Lalita Shri Vishakhanvitamscha He Krishna Karuna Sindho Dinabandho Jagatpate Gopesha Gopika Kanta Radha Kanta Namostute Tapta Kanchana Gaurangi Radhe Vrindavaneshwari Vrishabhanu Sute Devi Pranamami Hari Priye Vancha Kalpataru Bhyascha Krupa Sindhu Bhyevacha Patitanam Pavane Bhyo Vaishnave Bhyo Namo Namaha Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhar Shri Vasadi Gaur Bhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare 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 Krishna. So we are continuing the section of Uddhava Gita. We see here how Krishna is gradually developing the theme of rising from fruitive devotional service to speculative devotional service tinged with knowledge and speculation, then gradually bringing the reader, the student, to pure devotional service without any selfish desires, anya bilashita shunyam, that state. So in the earlier part of the purport, we find Prabhupada's disciples talking about how by sacrifice, when you sacrifice our possessions, our time, our other resources, it leads to purification of the heart. And when the heart is purified, then we can appreciate and understand transcendental knowledge. This connection is interesting. You sacrifice your resources, whatever possessions you have, and by sacrificing, our heart gets purified. And a pure heart can become aware of deeper realities of life. When the heart is clouded with various selfish desires, with various anarthas, then we cannot perceive certain subtle aspects of the material world and the spiritual world. Therefore, purification is essential, and purification can be brought about by sacrifice. Now, sacrifice takes various forms, and anarthas also can take various forms. When you say impurities in the heart, they take on various forms. Primarily, our acharyas classify anarthas into three sections: karmi tendencies, jnani tendencies, and yoga tendencies. And when So every living entity is contaminated by these tendencies. You work for karmic or fruitive results, or you work for acquiring knowledge and speculative tendencies are there, or you have tendencies to acquire, you know, siddhis and other kinds of supernatural powers. So every living entity has these tendencies. And when you add the devotional element into the activities of the living entities, then it becomes known as karma yoga, jnana yoga, or ashtanga yoga. And when none of these tendencies are present in one's activities, then it becomes pure bhakti yoga. Then our acharyas go on to classify it even further. When the devotional element is subordinate to the impurities, say for example, the tendency to acquire fruitive results is dominant and the devotional element or mood is taking an inferior position, then it is not even considered yoga. It is, they call it, the technical terms are bhakti mishra karma, bhakti mishra jnan, bhakti mishra yoga. Whereas when the devotional element is dominant and karma, jnana, yoga tendencies are subordinate, then they call it karma mishra bhakti, jnana mishra bhakti, yoga mishra bhakti. So in this way, all this permutation combination can lead to several forms of impure or mixed devotional services. And accordingly, there are technical terms given to each form. We won't be going into the details of all this. But we will try to discuss how sacrifice is an important and essential element in the Vedic Varnashram system. In any pure spiritual path, this element of sacrifice is always highlighted. And in the Gita, you find Krishna talking about various sacrifices. In the fourth chapter, we will try to see that section today. Starting from verse number 24, till the end of the fourth chapter, Krishna gives a detailed analysis of the various types of sacrifices each varna and ashram has to do in order to attain purification, which will ultimately lead to the development of knowledge, transcendental knowledge. So in verse number 24, he says, or verse number 25 onwards, he gives the list of sacrifices. He says, literal sacrifice, where you collect the ingredients, various resources, and you have the yajna kund, and then you offer into the ahuti items, into the fire. That is usually performed by nishkam karma yogis. Karma yogis, but then they don't expect any result, fruits out of it. And they are advised to perform these kind of sacrifices. Then those who are sakam karma yogis, that is the next verse. So this verse is brahmagna vapare yatnyam yatnya naiva upajukhvati. You offer the items into the sacrificial arena. Then the others, who are sakama, who have fruitive desires, who have various material ambitions, who want to acquire things and enjoy life in this world, even they have to perform sacrifice. But their sacrifice is directed towards the demigods. And that is, in the same verse, Krishna talks about it. And in the next verse, Krishna talks about a jnana yogi. What kind of sacrifices a jnani has to do, jnana yogi has to do? He offers the hearing process and the senses in the fire of mental control. So controlling the mind is considered sacrifice. And what do you offer in it? The hearing process. That is a sacrifice. So as brahmacharis, renunciants, we are to some extent following that path. We have to offer our hearing process and control the mind and offer it into that fire. And What about the grihasthas? They also have to sacrifice. Their sacrifice is the object of sacrifice the objects of the senses into the fire of the senses. So proper regulated sense gratification is considered a sacrifice. And the objects of the sacrifice are the items that you offer into that ahuti, into that fire. So grihasthas have to encounter and encounter various objects in the material world, but they have to dovetail it or utilize it properly in a regulated manner, then it becomes a sacrifice. Unrestricted sense gratification is not considered a sacrifice. In fact, it leads to sinful reactions. But when it is regulated and disciplined, based on shastric directions, then it becomes a sacrifice. Then in the next verse, Krishna talks about for a jnana yogi, again, restraining the senses and pranavayu. Daivam eva pareyatnyam yogina paryupasate brahmagna pareyatnyam sarvani indriya karmani prana karmani chapare atma samyama yogagnau juhvati jnana deepite. Others who are interested in achieving self-realization through control of the mind and senses offer the functions of all the senses and of the life breath as oblations into the fire of the controlled mind. So this is also again referring to a jnani, or it could be Ashtanga yogi also, where pranavayu is offered into the fire of mental control. In the next verse, it applies to all three, karma yogi, jnana yogi and Ashtanga yogi. Dravya yagyastapo yagya, yoga yagyastadapare, swadhyaya jnana yagyascha, yatayas samshitavrataha. Having accepted strict vows, some become enlightened by sacrificing their possessions, which is a karma yogi. Others by performing severe austerities, jnana yogi. By practicing the yoga of eightfold mysticism, or by studying the Vedas to advance in transcendental knowledge. So the activities of each of the ashram is a sacrifice. Like in the third chapter, Krishna says, yajnyarthat karmano nyatra lokoyam karma bandhana. If you don't sacrifice, then karma bandhana, you will be bound by fruitive karmic reactions. Tadartham karma kaunteya mukta sangha samachar. And only by sacrifices, mukta sangha samachar, you can attain freedom from all karmic bondage. So this is elaborated here in this section. And then in the next verse, Krishna says, for Ashtanga yogi, how by controlling the movements of the air, he offers sacrifice. Apane juhvati pranam, prane panam tathapare. Prana pana gati rudhva, prana yama parayana. Apare niyatahara, pranan prane shujuhvati. Still others who are inclined to the process of breath restraint to remain in trance, practice by offering the movement of the outgoing breath into the incoming, and the incoming breath into the outgoing. And thus at last, remain in trance, stopping all breathing. Others, curtailing the eating process, offer the outgoing breath into itself as a sacrifice. So yogis do this breath control, and by proper control of the breath, they attain a state of equilibrium. And that state is known as trance or samadhi. That is also a sacrifice for the Ashtanga yogis. And restraining eating, this is also for mainly for Ashtanga yogi, and total control of the eating process, like we saw Dhruva Maharaj did during his tapasya in 6 months, hardly eating anything, once in 3 days, once in 6 days. So these are activities of these are the sacrifices performed by Ashtanga yogis. And in this way, each of these class of yogis attain purification of the heart, and they advance in their spiritual path. And the first step of advancement is purification, and then purification leads to awareness of spiritual truths, devotional truths. about material world and the spiritual world. So therefore, in this purport of today, we see how Krishna is talking about purification of heart, and only then we can appreciate, perceive transcendental knowledge, which will lead to eventually appreciation of Krishna's personal form, Krishna's devotional qualities, and advance towards personal concept of God and start rendering devotional service to Krishna. That's how Krishna is building up the theme. And the Gita, Krishna continues the theme. He says, all sacrifices are not of the same value. Certain sacrifices give you temporary results, certain sacrifices give you more permanent results. But the principle of sacrifice is common to all. So if our activities are pleasure driven to attain and indulge in pleasure of the senses, then eventually we will be frustrated. It cannot give us satisfaction. But when our activities are centered on sacrifice and living for some noble cause, then we actually attain true happiness. We can understand and appreciate real happiness. Nayam lokosti naparo na sukham samshayatmana. So sacrifice means you give up certain small quantity of something in order to attain something big, in order to attain something permanent. And greater the amount of sacrifice, greater the result. Smaller the amount of sacrifice, temporary and smaller the results are. So in this way, everyone is advised to perform some sacrifice, begin with some little quantity, eventually increasing the quantity and advancing in spiritual path. And Krishna says, Shreyan dravyamayad yagyat jnana yagya parantapa sarvam karma khilam partha jnane parisamapyate. So all activities of sacrifice should culminate in jnana or transcendental knowledge. If it is not leading to jnana, then probably it is not a sacrifice. It could be something else. And what are the characteristics of transcendental knowledge? How do you know whether the knowledge is transcendental? Yajnyatva napunar moham evam yasisi pandava yena bhutani asheshani drakshasyatmanyathomai. Having obtained real knowledge from a self-realized soul, you will never fall again into illusion. Napunar moham. You will see that. So what is the effect of transcendental knowledge? You will see that all living beings are part of the Supreme. Or in other words, they are part of me. So real transcendental knowledge means the living entity is able to understand how everyone is a part of Krishna. You come to the personal concept of God. Otherwise you find so many jnanis in this world who claim to be jnanis, but they don't believe in a personal form of God. In fact, many of them don't believe in God. And so that kind of knowledge is not transcendental knowledge. Eventually it should lead to Krishna's personal form. Acknowledging Krishna's personality and understanding how every living entity is a part and parcel of Krishna. So when sacrifice leads to this kind of knowledge, then it is bona fide sacrifice and you acquire bona fide knowledge. And then Krishna goes on to say how in this world there is nothing more sublime and pure as transcendental knowledge. Such knowledge is the mature fruit of all mysticism. And one who has become accomplished in the practice of devotional service enjoys this knowledge within himself in due course of time. Enjoys this knowledge means you become happy and appreciate the variegatedness of this world and how everything is connected to one universal cause. That kind of awareness is intellectually satisfying. So this such nothing is more sublime and pure as transcendental knowledge. Nahi jnanena sadrusham pavitram iha vidyate. Tat svayam yoga samsiddha kalena atmanivindati. And who can acquire transcendental knowledge? Krishna says, a faithful man only who is dedicated to transcendental knowledge and who subdues his senses is eligible to achieve such knowledge, and eventually he attains peace. This is another effect of one who has obtained transcendental knowledge. He becomes peaceful. Otherwise, we are always agitated with material desires, restlessness, flickering nature of our mind. So one who acquires transcendental knowledge, he is able to see the oneness in creation, the ultimate cause of all creation, which makes him peaceful and happy. And then Krishna says how one who is not one who is a doubtful soul can never appreciate, can never understand and relish happiness in this world, in the next. A doubting soul is always confused, bewildered, cannot understand, cannot perceive real happiness. So that's the section of sacrifice that in this purport you find in the earlier section. So, purification of heart, we will try to discuss this section. Purification of heart, impurities in the heart will refer to any tendency that is driving us to obtain fruits of this world or to acquire knowledge of this world, like in a jnani kind of tendency, acquire more and more knowledge but not leading to pure devotion service, that kind of tendency, or the desire to obtain several mystic powers. Any of these desires is considered an impurity. And therefore, purification is essential. So for every living entity or a practitioner of devotion service, we all have these kind of tendencies to some degree or the other. The challenge is to identify what is my tendency, which impurities are present in my heart, and how I can get rid of them. So therefore, an analytical study can be helpful to some extent. So our acharyas give good analysis. In all three, whatever the level of or type of impurity one may be having, one thing is common to everyone, whether it is karmi, jnani, yogi, whatever. The common element in all is the spirit of independence and rebellion. We want to enjoy separately from Krishna. Whether you want to enjoy the fruits, gross fruits or subtle fruits, the tendency to enjoy separately from Krishna is the impurity present in that mixed form of devotion. And that's the impurity we want to clear off and eventually come to pure devotion service. Now, Krishna's magnanimity is by the addition of that devotional element, like in Karma Yoga, Jnana Yoga, the yoga part is the devotional element. By the force and the purity of the devotional element, this spirit of independence will gradually dissolve. That's the purity of devotion service. And eventually the living entity realizes his mistake and he starts developing and cultivating pure desires. The desire to unconditionally serve Krishna without any selfish desires. That's the whole program of reforming the conditioned living entities. But that takes time. To the degree the proportion of devotion element is there in the activity, to that degree the purification will be faster. And if the devotion element is less, then it will take more amount of time. So that element which is added, the impurity, that is also called devotion service. But it is called mixed devotion service. Or some acharyas call it the semblance of devotion. Externally, it looks like devotion. It looks like bhakti yoga. But when you add these kind of impurities, karma yogi, jnana yogi tendencies, then that form is called mixed devotion or semblance of devotion. Shivaram Maharaj goes on to explain in great detail what that semblance of devotion is, and he quotes Bhaktivinoda Thakur. No, this Prabhupada quotes. Prabhupada gives a list of 13 kinds of Jnana Yogis in one purport in Chaitanya Charitamrita. 13 types of Jnana Yogis and several types of Karma Yogis, tendencies, what kind of impurities these people can have and how it takes on different forms. So when the devotional event is less and karma jnana tendencies are more, then the risk is eventually the practitioner will stagnate and get fixed in one certain level. He usually doesn't advance. So karma yogi will remain a karma yogi if the devotional element is less. Jnani will remain a jnani, yogi will remain a yogi. And these people will think whatever state they have attained is the goal. So for example, if a karma yogi is practicing this form of yoga, his destination will be maybe heavenly planets or some happy life in this world. And such a person remains satisfied with that position he has attained. And he doesn't want to advance further. He is self-satisfied, apparently. And he wants to continue that state forever. Jnani is appreciating and enjoying the results of knowledge. And he feels that is the highest form of attainment. A yogi who attains several mystic powers and displays those mystic powers, he feels that is the goal of all spiritual practices. And he gets stuck at that position. So only when they meet a pure devotee who is practicing pure unalloyed devotion, and when they receive pure transcendental knowledge, that's when the desire to advance further is aroused in a practitioner. And then they start thinking, oh, this is not the final goal. There is something more to attain. And in this way, they take up higher forms of practices. So, the semblance of devotion, he explains how it can take unlimited forms. What we saw is karma jnana. This is just broad classification of mixed forms. Prabhupada says, you know, 3 into 3 is 9, 9 into 9 is 81. Three modes you take the permutation combination, it takes 9 forms. Then again mix them up, it takes 81 forms. Again mix them up, 81 into 81. There is no end. Like we have three modes, Sattva, Rajas, Tamas, Gun. These modes combine together to unlimited forms. And whatever the percentage of each mode is present in a living entity, accordingly his behavior is decided. Similarly, the practices that one performs is also driven by these three modes. And it can have unlimited forms of mixed devotion, depending on the amount of each mode present in that practice. So, in this way, the analysis continues. And he says, how? What is the seed? Just like Kaviraj Goswami says, Bhakti Lata Beach, Brahmanda Brahmite Kona Bhagyavanji, Guru Krishna Prasade Pai Bhakti Lata Beach. So, when a living entity hears pure transcendental knowledge from a devotee, so that knowledge is what plants the seed of pure devotion in the heart. So pure knowledge will plant pure seed in a living entity's heart. And any other form of knowledge that we hear will similarly plant a different kind of seed in the heart. So he says, therefore he wants, one should carefully contemplate the effect of submissive hearing of mundane topics unrelated to Krishna can have on the heart. That kind of hearing sows or plants non-devotional seeds. Seeds caused and nurtured by mundane movies, music, books, education, magazines, even idle thoughts, compete with and suppress the growth of the delicate creeper of devotion. So we have this analogy, you know, Bhakti Lata Beach creeper is there, sown in the garden of the heart, and then there are so many weeds growing up. These weeds are just not automatically growing. It depends on what kind of things we hear and see and watch. Accordingly, certain seeds of the weeds are planted, and then they start growing, and then they start choking the original bhakti creeper. And then he says, only 3 decades after Prabhupada's disappearance, it is common to hear of initiated devotees frequenting movies and watching other kind of things. He is pitying the situation. How we are callous towards so many non-devotional influences. Either we are ignorant or we are callous. And then we expose our minds and hearts to these kind of vibrations, which is causing several non-devotional seeds to get planted in the heart. These creepers then grow, and then they strangle the Bhaktilata creeper, and its growth is suppressed. Therefore, the sadhana process is to, every day we chant and attend the morning program, is to clear these weeds that are growing around the Bhaktilata creeper, and in this way keep the main creeper alive so that it is exposed to the sun of pure devotion. Otherwise, if so many creepers are strangling the creeper, so many weeds are strangling the creeper, then the original sunlight is not penetrating through the thick mesh, and the creeper is unable to receive the sunlight and other nourishment. So in this way, regular cutting off the weeds, just like a gardener does in a garden or in a farm, a regular cutting off the weeds are essential. Only then the real nourishment will penetrate and nourish the seed. So he says, any form of this mixed devotion is semblance or abhas. Just like we have namabhas, pure nam, namabhas, and nam aparad. Similarly, what may appear to be a pure devotion could be actually a bhaktiabhas. Not necessarily, if it is driven by these kind of desires. So usually we don't identify. We don't identify our motive behind practices. Externally we understand impure devotion is not good and we should practice pure devotion. But most of the times we are unable to identify what is driving us to perform any so-called devotional activity. And only by continuous practice we hope to achieve, understand, oh, this was not exactly pure devotion service as I thought initially. It was tainted by selfish desires, and therefore it was not really offering a good offering for Krishna. So therefore, continuous study of Prabhupada's books, continuous intense sadhana will make it clear for us that this is the area of improvement that I need to work on, and eventually come to the standard of pure devotion. So in this verse, today's verse, there is this word of nirapeksha. I was reminded of one section in this book, the new book. I got a new copy of this book. This is Manashiksha. Manashiksha by Raghunath Das Goswami, and several commentaries by our ISKCON leaders, Bhakti Vigyan Maharaj and Jayadvait Maharaj, have written commentaries. So this book contains about 12 verses of Raghunath Das Goswami. These are prayers to the mind. The living entity is praying to the mind, please accept pure devotion service. He's treating the mind as a person. So in one verse, he says, he's chastising the mind. He says, O ruffian mind, why do you burn yourself and me by bathing in the trickling urine of the great donkey of full-blown hypocrisy and duplicity? He compares the desire of hypocrisy and duplicity to donkey urine. Instead, you should always bathe in the ocean of love emanating from the lotus feet of Sri Sri Gandharvika Giridhari, thereby delighting yourself and me. So Bhaktivinoda Thakur has written a night's commentary. He has written a song and a commentary on each of these verses. So he explains the whole detailed analysis. He says there are three kinds of sadhakas. Two are grihasthas, one is a renunciant. So the grihastha sadhakas are swanishtha sadhakas, parinishtha sadhakas, and the third, the renunciant, is nirapeksha, that we find here, nirapeksha sadhakas. So each of these can perform pure devotion service, but when they are influenced by this duplicity and deceit and hypocrisy, then their devotional practice takes on impure forms, several impure forms. So what are swanishtha sadhakas? They are those who perform, one second, Swanishtha sadhakas only endeavors to please Sri Bhagavan. They are grihasthas, but their goal is just to please Krishna. And somehow they maintain their life by practicing Krishna consciousness, directly preaching Krishna consciousness. And they are happy. And they completely reject all kinds of social obligations, social regulative principles. Not that they violate the principle, but they don't care about social norms. They are totally dedicated and surrendered to the mission of Krishna. That is swanishtha sadhakas. Parinishtha sadhakas are those who live in this world, perform their regular occupational duties, and offer their results of work to Krishna. So that is also pure devotion service. Yat karoshi yad ashnasi, we hear in the Gita. And the last, the renunciants, they are the ones who are completely renounced. Such persons are of a detached nature and not in the grihastha ashram. All three are benefited only when they become thoroughly honest and give up deceit, pretense and hypocrisy. This is that original verse, Raghunath Das Goswami's. We have to give up the deceit, pretense and hypocrisy. Now how each of these, when influenced by deceit, pretense and hypocrisy, what happens? What kind of result happen? That's Bhaktivinoda Thakur's explanation. He says, so for the swanishthas, swanishtha means grihasthas who have dedicated their entire life, their hypocrisy and deceit can take four forms. Six forms. First is indulging in sense gratification on the pretext of satisfying Krishna. Next, serving rich, influential materialists instead of serving simple servants of Krishna. So you decide whom to serve based on his social position, wealthy position, and you be too selective about whom to serve. That is a sign of hypocrisy and deceit, according to Bhaktivinoda Thakur. Then third is, you accumulate more and more wealth than you actually need. That is also a kind of deceit. Next he says, enthusiasm for meaningless gains, some temporary little flickering gains, but you are too enthusiastic to obtain them and collect them. That is also a kind of deceit. Even at the cost of envying and harming others. Next he says, teaching twisted logic and self-motivated speculation in the name of giving education. This also could be a deceit. And last he says, wearing the dress of a materially disinterested renunciant in order to gain material prestige. This is for swanishtha bhaktas. So they may not be intentionally doing, but somehow these kind of tendencies creep in and it takes these perverted forms. For the other class, the Parinishta Sadhakas, he says it can take two forms, two perverted forms. One is making an external show of strictly following principles, but inwardly attached to material objects. And the next is preferring the association of non-devotees rather than Krishna conscious devotees. So in the name of preaching, we may associate with too many people and eventually start enjoying their association and stay away from regular devotees. So that is also a pretentious form of devotion. And for the renunciants, Bhaktivinoda Thakur gives a list of 8 perverted forms, interestingly. So he says, for Nirapeksha Sadhakas, thinking oneself to be an advanced Vaishnava. He gives nice pictures here, they're nice paintings. Thinking oneself to be an advanced Vaishnava. Next is thinking of oneself as superior to others simply by wearing the dress of a renunciant. So you allow people to touch your feet and give blessings. That kind of attitude is a deceitful and hypocritical nature. Next is collecting material wealth for food and clothing more than required. Even for renunciants, we also can end up collecting more than required. Next is improperly associating with the opposite sex in the name of spiritual practices. Fifth is staying with materialistic people with the expectation of receiving wealth rather than visiting Krishna's temple. Next, being inwardly anxious and worried about collecting more wealth while making a pretense of performing devotional service or chanting. Too anxious about our future, maybe. Who will maintain me? Who will take care of me? Who will provide my necessities and security? That kind of over anxiety is kind of pretentious devotion. Next is seventh, being more concerned with external dress and rules and regulations than devotion to Krishna. And the last he says, overlooking or neglecting the main purpose of spiritual life. So we may not be doing anything, we may be attending everything, all devotional practices, programs, but not exactly clear focus on the purpose of doing it is also a kind of deceit and hypocrisy. So how to get out of all this? Eventually they talk about holy name. Holy name can purify all contaminations and all can remove all anarthas. He talks about for those who are actually who have actually cleared even the gross anarthas, lust, anger, greed, they are not so much troubled by these. This is for much more advanced people who are free of lust, anger, greed. Now they are trapped in these kind of anarthas. So what about those who are already struggling with the basic anarthas, gross anarthas? We have to struggle, get out of those, and then we have to think about these. But anyway, it is nice to have the challenges. Nice to know the challenges that lie ahead instead of having a dreamy picture of Krishna prema and pure devotion service. So when that is clear, then we understand the challenges are real and not that it's going to be a smooth ride. But this is not to discourage our practice, this is not to scare us, and just to understand where to work on, where to focus on. And Shivram Maharaj talks about the 5 limbs of devotion service, of which chanting and associating of devotees are the most crucial. Taking complete shelter of the holy name and staying in the association of devotees, if these two can take care of all other 64 limbs of devotion service. So never ever we are supposed to give up these two. And as long as we are in the protection of devotees, then all these things will eventually come and we will advance in pure devotional service. So I'll stop here. Thank you very much. Hare Krishna. Kantra Srimad Bhagavatam ki. Yeah.